Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. I hope you are doing well. We are live on Monday and just got after it. Gonna get after it again. But today, want to talk about an interesting topic that is very common. Many people ask this question and that a lot of people get two things confused. So two things that get confused with pull-ups is how you grab the bar. Do you grab it like this or you grab it like this? You can even use a hook grip if you want. Some gymnasts will use a false grip. How do you grab the bar, you know, for your grip? Then there are other types of grips or pull-ups that add variety to your workout. So many of you guys have probably seen some of my programming where I use regular grip, right? Just grabbing onto it about shoulder width, a little bit after shoulder width apart, right? You can either go this way, you can go this way. I'll give you a reason why you do one or the other. You can go reverse grip. You can go close grip. You can go wide grip. And you can go mountain climber grip. Now, another option is throw a rope over the pull-up bar and do rope climb pull-ups if you don't have a rope climb. So there's multiple ways to add variety to the pull-up exercise. Something I like to do is mix in multiple grips. Sometimes if I'm doing a PT pyramid, I'll go up the pyramid using regular grip, the grip that I'm going to be tested in. And then coming down, I'll change it up a little bit, add a variety, do some slow eccentric reverse pull-ups, work the biceps a little more. Or I'll go wide. You know, I would say wide's probably my weakest pull-up, so I like to work those on occasion just because I suck at them compared to close grip or regular grip or reverse grip. A lot of people's first pull-up will be a reverse grip chin-up type pull-up. Just because they tend to be a little easier. A lot of people work biceps more than they work back, you know, when they first get started. So that chin up is usually the first option for you. But anyway, the goal is to practice the one you're going to be tested the most. And then just to add variety so you don't get weird tendonitis developing, especially when you start adding volume of 100 plus, you know, repetitions to your pull-up workouts. You definitely want to add some variety. You know, sometimes I've had a pulled forearm muscle where I couldn't do regular grip at all, no matter how I put my thumb. So I had to go reverse grip, or I had these special hooks that went over the bar and it made it a prone grip. I didn't even mention prone grip. That's another one, depending on how your pull-up bar is set up. But yeah, there's a whole lot of ways to do them. I like them all. You know, which the big debate, though, isn't like how many pull-up grips do you have. It's how do you grab the bar. And I say two ways. I like going this way if I know I'm doing a lot of repetitions. And usually for me, that's somewhere between 150, 200 reps of pull-ups in a workout, you know, spread out over an hour or so. I am much better at being able to get those reps and not tire out my forearms compared to this method. Now, if you want to work your grip more, absolutely. Put that thumb over that bar, or you can even hook grip it too. Even seen some people do that. But some of the true studs in pull-ups, the gymnasts, they use what's called a false grip, where they grab that bar and they have kind of a bent arm to it. It's hard to do, requires a lot more forearms, but it's a good one. I mean, can't argue with results. You know, when you see a gymnast go up there and crank out 50 pull-ups without resting, you're like, damn, he knows what he's doing. I'm not going to tell that guy how to do pull-ups at all. You do whatever grip you want, sir. So find one that works best for you. Which is better for your PT test, though? I knew we'd have that question. It's up to you. You go this way, go this way. I mean, 20 reps, if you're going to max out a pull-up test with 20 reps, I would go this way. Just get it over with. But it really doesn't matter because you're probably not going to lose your grip in a 20-rep set, right? You're probably going to lose your grip if you were to do 5 or 6 sets of 15, 20 reps. Grip starts weakening, and you may want to do kind of what I call the mountain climber grip, because if you ever climb a rock wall, you know, you're not doing it with your thumbs out here. You're kind of out here, and can't argue with mountain climber grippers. I mean, those guys are professional grips for sure. Looks like we got some questions coming in over here on Instagram. Hello, sir. Serving Army member in South Africa. Oh, welcome. Which one of your books or programs would you recommend? A 35-year-old man going to airborne ranger type selection with emphasis on running. I would imagine you probably do some rucking too. I mean, that's just my assumption. Pretty much all militaries are putting a backpack on, running and rucking with and without it. I would go with the Army Special Forces one, and I might have a copy of it right here. Boom. Army Special Ops Ranger SF workout. Got a ton of new stuff in there. I just updated. Oop, I lose my. There we go. That's the one I'd go with. Army Special Ops. It will prepare you for running, rucking, upper body calisthenics, lifting, the Army CFT, the Army PFT. So it's a good one to build up to load-bearing activities and build up your mileage. And 35 is young enough. I wish I was 35. Which is better for your PT test? Oh, someone asked that question. Thank you for everything you do. Can't wait for SOT. Nice. How high do you think you should score on a PST to lock in a SEAL contract? That's a good question. Most people are breaking 9 minutes on the swim, 9 minutes on the run, 80 push-ups and sit-ups, and 15 to 20 pull-ups. I call that kind of like the minimum standard of getting a contract. If you're slower than that or not doing as well as that, you know, you got a potential weakness that could come back to bite you. So I would definitely work on that weakness. But I will tell you this, most guys are somewhere between 8 minutes and 8:30 on the swim, 8:30 to 9 minutes on the run. And, you know, most of them are well above 80, you know, 80 to 90, sometimes 100 plus on the push-ups and sit-ups with 20 plus on the pull-ups. So you're going to get a range. And that first one I mentioned is I would consider that the lower range. And then, you know, you'll see higher ranges too. Strength exercise suggestions for shin splints, as well as favorite kinetic and static stretching. Do you have a book on these? You know what? I don't have anything that specifically addresses shin splints. However, the programming that you do can address shin splints in a preventative manner if it's smart, if it's progressive. If you're susceptible to them, you run every other day, maybe bike or swim on the days in between. You can opt to run on softer ground versus hard pavement. like side of dirt road, gravel, turf, grass, rubberized track. You know, all those are going to help you with shin splints. Another one is ankle mobility. Work on ankle mobility. And if you're looking at strength exercises, I would just say, you know, heel raises and toe raises. So go up on your toes, flex your calves, go up on your heels, lift your toes off the floor, flex your shins. And just go back and forth, right? I usually do like 30 or 40 before a run, 30 or 40 after a run. Stretch out my ankles really well. And, you know, get a good pair of running shoes. So there is an article I wrote with a doctor of physical therapy. In fact, I'm going to Google it. Shin splints, Stu Smith. That's what I want you to do there, Spencer. And you'll see shin splints, medial tibial stress syndrome by Seth Donaldson. He's a friend of mine, used to train with us when he lived here. I'm going to put this in the comments section. I'll put it over here on the comment section in Instagram, even though I know you can't click it, but you can click it over here on YouTube where this video will be saved. But it's a StuSmithFitness.com article. If you just type that in, you'll see it. Not a problem. Mental tips for push-ups. I didn't know. Does it require mental toughness to do push-ups? Come on, man. I would say out of all the exercises in the world, push-ups are probably the first exercise you did when you were 1 year old. Now, it has nothing to do with mental. When your quads start shaking during a 2 minute IFT, that just means you're not in push-up shape and your central nervous system is shot. Like, my advice to you is once you start shaking, just fall, because you are doing a massive energy dump right there when you are shaking like this, trying to get one more push-up. It's not worth the amount of energy you burn getting that last rep in. Just fall when you start shaking. But here's the deal. You're going to have to work on your 2 minute push-ups and work on your planking. In fact, the mental tip I have for you is do the death by push-ups workout. If you don't know what that is, once again, you can Google it, because it's a thing. Put my name in it and you'll see me write about it. Death by push-ups work like this. You're going to do a 5 minute plank, but I prefer, for guys taking 2 minute fitness tests, stay in the up push-up position for 5 minutes. But every minute on the minute, you do 10 push-ups, right? And then whenever you're done with those 10 push-ups, maybe takes you 15 seconds to do, you got to hold it there in the up push-up position until the next minute comes by. And then every minute on the minute, you do 10 push-ups. That is both a mental and a physical tip for you. Also, I hate the word tip, hacks, and secrets, because there are none, right? It is hard work. You just got to get in better push-up shape if you're shaking. Kind of like if your heart's beating out of your chest when you run a 6 minute mile, you get in better running shape. Can't maintain a 50-second 50-meter swim when you are swimming, get in better swimming shape. Besides 50-50, the 50-50 swim workout, if you don't know that is, Google it. It's a good one. Would you recommend swimming more than 2 miles to prepare for the 2 mile ocean swim at Buds? No, we build up to swimming with fins for 4,000 yards. You're going to swim 4,000 yards, 2 nautical miles. A nautical mile is 2,000 yards. So you're going to swim 2 of those every week at Buds. So just be able to do 2 mile ocean swims. It doesn't take a lot to prepare for them. And I mean, I've seen people get to Buds and never wear fins before until they got there, and they were still able to get through it. So, but they were good swimmers. They had big legs, and so it wasn't that big a deal to them. But, you know, for your first month of swimming with fins, your ankles are going to hurt, and it's going to be hard. You can get some of that pain out of the way long before you show up there by just swimming with fins on leg days. So every day you do legs in the week, swim a mile, right, with fins. You know, build up to a mile and a half, build up to 2 miles. But, you know, at the end of the week, as long as you've done somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 yards of swimming with fins, I think that's fine. And that's a lot. I mean, you could probably do half of that and still be fine. All right. Can swim a, here's one with swimming with fins. And this is where you want to get your swim to. John says he can swim a 68-minute 2-mile swim with fins easy, but can only swim an 850, 500-yard putting out. Do you know the reason for this? Yes. Probably you have strong legs and you can power with those rocket fins just fine. But you probably don't have an effective scissor kick or breaststroke kick when you're not wearing fins. Now, I will tell you this. There were a couple football players that went through buds with us, and I thought they weren't going to get into buds because they sucked so much at swimming. They were ripped, strong, powerful dudes, but you know, without fins, they just were horrible. Like close to minimum standard. You're beating them, right? And whenever they put on a pair of fins, though, they were top swim pair of the class, usually first or second swim pair coming across at 60, 65 minutes for a 2-mile swim open water with fins. So, it just means your legs are strong. I'd be honest with you, I wouldn't worry about it. You know, an 850 is fast enough to get you 2 buds. And after your 500-yard swim and prep, you will never do a 500-yard swim without fins. Again, all of your swims are going to be with fins the rest of your time at Buds. So you're good enough already with the swim without fins. Don't waste a lot of time doing it. Your swim's controlled. My advice would be work on a different weakness. You know, maybe treading is something challenging for you since you don't have a very good kick. Treading with no hands might be what I would focus on next. What will a SOT tryout be like? They're just normal workouts that the SOT team does. So we basically have a 2-a-day week of tryouts where not only do people who want to be on that team try out, but the team actually does the workouts with you. So we're not asking you to do something we don't normally do. So they're literally workouts we do. So something you can look up is the Devil's Mile. You'll do that. You'll do a PST. Might even do 2 PSTs back to back. You'll do the what I call the Sam Baby Devil Murph Classic. Get good at those, and that should cover you pretty well. All right, looks like I've answered all the questions. You guys got any more questions? What's the max amount of minutes of treading water at one time for buds? I don't know. It really doesn't matter. I mean, you should be able to do 10 minutes. You should be able to do 20 minutes. Whatever they tell you to do, just do it. We usually do this. We usually tread for 10 minutes, no hands. And then we will also practice with scuba fins, treading, no hands, holding, or wearing a weight belt or holding 10 pounds out of the water for 5 minutes. So just to get used to that. Any advice for drills for breathing during the CSS? Can run 10 miles easy, swim a lap, no problem. But the second I turn around for a second lap, I lose my breath. You know, I wrote a special article for you, and it is called, you'll like this. It's called, Dude, You Are Not in Swimming Shape. Doesn't matter how well you can run. Really doesn't. In fact, check this article out here. It's you just got to get in swimming shape. So my advice is read that article, because there's a great workout that I send to everybody who needs to get in better swimming shape. It's called the 50-50 swim workout. It's basically 50 meters free style followed by 50 meters CSS. You do that 10 times. You warm up or cool down with a 500. Next thing you know, you're swimming 1,500 yards to get in shape for a 500-yard swim, and I promise you, that will get you in shape for a 500-yard swim. Takes about 3 weeks. I've seen guys go from 10 minutes to 8 minutes in a month, easily. Is there a fitness or health benefit or danger to doing hundreds of pull-ups? We're concerned with some of our young motivators who push past 500, 600 pull-ups in a day for challenge goals. I like high repetition calisthenic workouts, but I don't like daily high repetition calisthenics workouts. And personally, I've never done 500 or 600 pull-ups in a day or in a workout. Don't think you need it. Even at my age, I really don't consider a pull-up workout a workout unless I get 100, right? 100 pull-ups is when I start to feel like I did enough pull-ups in a normal workout. But I only do that 2, maybe 3 times a week. So every other day, some days there's 2 days in between those pull-ups. You know, and some days I'll go a little bit crazier. I'll get 150 in there. I may get 200. I rarely go over 200 though. So I don't recommend 500, 600 pull-ups at all. It's not needed. You know, unless you're trying to break the world record for pull-ups, you don't need it. Good question though. Let's see, is learning how to egg beat tread a must for going to buds, or can you get good at scissor flutter kicks? Absolutely, you can get good at scissor flutter kicks. In fact, I did not know how to do the egg beater until, you know, I was 5 years in the teams before I even attempted it. You know, I had a buddy of mine that was a water polo player. We were swimming. He was hanging out, just talking to me, doing egg beater, and I'm sitting there watching him. Let me try this. And wasn't good at it at first. And then I got a little more mobile in my hip, knees, and ankles, and that made all the difference. In fact, if you are having problems with egg beater, I want you to read this article. Treading might be a mobility issue. It most likely is. In fact, everybody that I have taught egg beater understood what egg beater was, but they did not have the ability to get their ankles up high enough so they could push straight down with the water. A lot of people think the egg beater is spinning your legs like this, where it's actually you're pushing down and then bringing them up, pushing down. Bringing them up. If you don't push down, you're not producing downward force that keeps your head above the water. So if you're just spinning in circles like this, you got to think of force vectors and which direction they're going. Otherwise, you're you're going to be hanging out, barely able to do it, and just getting tired spinning your legs in circles. So egg beater is just a horrible name for what that stroke is. It's really an alternating breaststroke kick. If you know how to do the breaststroke kick, you can do the egg beater. So my advice would be practice some breaststroking and then practice mixing it up with egg beater, going vertical, doing some vertical breaststroke kicks, and then some alternating breaststroke kicks. Next thing you know, you got the egg beater. But you may need to mix in some frog pose stretches that's in that article. That could be very helpful for you with getting the mobility needed to get a full range of motion on that kick. Yep. I guess that's about it. Nobody else? I do appreciate your time for coming on and asking questions. I'll take a few more questions, but before I do, just remember, if I missed your question, just send it to me by email, stu@stusmith.com. Use a Google search, ask that same question, put my name in it. I probably wrote an article about it, seriously. But if I missed your question, just send it to me in my email or DM me over on Instagram. Send me some swim videos if you want me to critique them. A lot of people DM me those on Instagram as well. I just respond to it and tell you what you're doing right or wrong. But then you can go to stusmithfitness.com, read a bunch of articles, check out our programs that we have over there. Save 15% with Live15 coupon code and get to training. Don't forget, if you're looking for CSS help, you can go over to either my reels over on Instagram or you can go to TikTok, StuSmith50. And I got a whole page with over 150 videos on CSS over there. So that's pretty useful as well. But looks like there's a question. What's the longest you've had to hold your breath underwater at Buds? Should you train for breath holding capacity? You know what? I never did. I never trained to hold my breath. I mean, about the only time I was training to hold my breath was for the underwater knot tying events. And I gave myself about 30 seconds for every knot. And so I practiced that first, you know, hold my breath while I tied a knot, did the procedures, come up, take my breath, get a couple of breaths, tell the instructor what knot you're going to do next, go down, do it again. You know, you do that five different knots. Not a particularly easy test. You definitely want to practice holding your breath and tying a knot at the same time because, you know, thinking while holding your breath sometimes is challenging for people. Pool comp definitely held my breath a little longer than that, but I really don't think it was over a minute. Maybe 45 seconds to a minute, somewhere around that, where, you know, you fix the problem and then you can breathe on your scuba gear. So I was lucky, you know, I didn't have to bail, was able to fix the problem, but it took me about 45, 50 seconds before I was able to get my first breath on the scuba test that is called OC8, which we used to call pool comp. But yeah, I mean, it's never a bad idea to be able to hold your breath for a minute. Even the 50 meter underwater swim is maybe 45 seconds. Question. And this is one that, how many miles a week running do you recommend before shipping? I've answered this one many times. You know, I've answered it many different ways. I would say anywhere between 30 and 40 miles a week is plenty. Throw in a ruck in there too. But I've seen guys do it with 25 a week. They were solid runners with 25 a week, never failed a 4-mile timed run, never got shin splints, So it really kind of depends on your athletic history, how high you need to build up. I've seen people get over 50 miles a week and never passed a 4 mile time run because all they did was long, slow distance running. So another question was, what percentage of your run training should be high mileage and speed work? We kind of mix it all together. Like, for instance, one of our favorite workouts is we run 2.5 miles just to get to this hill. Then we run the hill hard. And then we run goal pace intervals back at, like, 800 meter goal pace intervals, which means it's not a sprint. It's not slow. It's at, if we're trying to run a 9 minute mile and a half, we're going to shoot for a 3 minute 800. So there's some goal pace running that's thrown in there. So I would say we mix it up with, it's a good question. Probably about 50-50, really. We'll build up to like 35, 40 miles this week, or sorry, this cycle by end of summer or middle of summer. And I would say there are a few more longer runs in that. But right now, when we're at like 25 miles a week, it's mostly shorter, faster run pacing drills. Do I still do bodybuilders? Yes, I do bodybuilders. I prefer bodybuilders to burpees, be honest with you. Would you recommend doing a SOCOM athlete hell day? Sure. I think those are great little tools to test your will. You're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to get challenged. You're going to get a lot of negative feedback from instructors. It's a good taste of what it's like. Can you handle it? That's a good one. It will definitely expose some weaknesses. That's the beauty of those programs. A lot of people say don't do them. I'm like, they're not necessary, but they're a nice assessment. If you think you are ready and you've done everything you think you need to do, assess yourself with one of those events, and then you might be wiser because of it. One way you're going to learn something, you're going to learn, like, hey, I did pretty well. I'm ready to go. Or I'm like, whoo, I never carried a body on soft sand and rucked in soft sand before. I need to get better at that. So yes. Let's see. I noticed many people wearing weight vests at the park recently. Never saw it before. I wonder if there's a TikTok trend, or maybe they're just getting popular. That's funny. I don't know. I'm not really on TikTok that much, but I haven't seen many weight vests on it. I'd say they're getting popular. In fact, I read a statistic that weight vests are have increased in sales since COVID by like 25% or something like that. It was significant. So maybe that's what you're seeing. Post-COVID effects. Should that 50-50 run mileage speed work be used with swim training also? No. I would say upper body days for us are no fin days. So we're working on 50-50s. We're working on freestyle combos with underovers, working on a variety of skills, not necessarily speed, because speed in the pool is a pace, right? There's no sprint in the CSS. It's if you're going to sprint, you're just going to waste a lot of energy. You want to glide every stroke, so it's a technique. You can still go fast, but it's not like you kick harder and you stroke faster to go faster. You get good pulls, you get good kicks, you got tight streamlines, you'll go faster. So we break our swims into fin days and non-fin days, and the fin days are lower body days, like leg days that we would do, rucking. We'd ruck and swim the same day often. Swim with fins the same day often. It's just a great way to top off leg day. So upper body days are swimming, skills, and conditioning. Lower body days are swimming with fins. But I would say, you know, throughout our cycle, our percentages of running changes, meaning should we run fast, should we run slow, aerobic-based training, sprints, intervals, goal pace work, really depends on where we are in our cycle. Right now, we're doing some speed work, we're doing some goal pace work, and starting to throw in a little bit of longer, slower distance, just because we're starting to build up our mileage. And some of the best ways to build up your mileage, if you're doing sprint days and goal pace days and hill days and beach days and rucking all together, is to throw in just an easy, long, slow distance day. Or if you're nursing Achilles or shins or things like that, take out that long, slow distance day and just swim more or bike instead. You know, the problem with just saying, hey, I'm going to build up to 50 miles, you know, fairly, you know, be honest with you, it's kind of an arbitrary number that has worked for some and hasn't worked for some. You know, it depends on the person. If someone has a chronic foot injury, ankle for years, which running hurts still, do you recommend running still, or you have seen people heal from that eventually? Any tips? I would seriously focus on ankle mobility and working foot and shin muscles. So heel raises, toe raises. But make sure you're getting the ankle mobility of a ballerina. And that will be helpful with that type of injury. But I do have a rule when it comes to running, and it is, what's up, Ray? And that rule is, if it hurts to run, stop running. If it hurts to walk, don't run. And if it hurts just laying around doing nothing, go see a doctor. And work around it. Do other things that you can do to work your cardio without hurting that injury. So it doesn't mean like do nothing. It means find a bike, find an elliptical, a rowing machine, swim more. You know, all of those things to help you with your cardio that you're missing because you can't run. You know, I've seen guys not be able to run, and because of the bike workouts they were doing, they came back healed and no pain and faster. So get on that bike. Assault bikes, all others. Is your PST book, what's the difference when you say run fast versus run at goal pace? Fast is my basic run as fast as you can, right? Goal pace is not a sprint, right? And fast isn't necessarily a sprint. You know, if it's 800 meters, if I say 800 meters fast, that means faster than goal pace. If I say 800 meters at goal pace, if you are running a 10-minute mile and a half and you want to try to run a 9-minute mile and a half, your goal pace is a 6-minute mile pace, and you should try to run it at 3 minutes for that 800. So there you go. All right. Looks like we've been at this for 40 minutes. You guys asked some pretty good questions. I appreciate your time. I'm going to call it quits now because I got to head out and get some stuff done. I'll be back tomorrow with some CSS critiques. So come on back 9:30. I'll be live again tomorrow. Bring your questions, or you can email them if you missed them. So I'll see you tomorrow on that one. But But looks like I got one more question before I sign off. Blake, I'll give this one to you. What's the ideal distance you recommend for hill days? Quarter mile, half mile? Does the distance change the intervals or intensity you recommend? I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you asking the size of the hill or distance of hills? I'm not sure what you're saying there. Put it this way. Our hill day, we run 2.5 miles just to get to this hill. And it's a quarter mile hill. You go up a quarter mile, you come down a quarter mile. We do that 5 times. You run back 2.5 miles back to where we started. That's how we do it. So if you don't have to run that far, then do more hills. But we run it fast. We try to get up that hill pretty fast, and then we walk down. All right, folks, I'm going to go. I hope you guys have a good one, and I will see you tomorrow.